agree or disagree.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Marina Joshi, and today with my guests, I'm discussing U.S. and China rivalry over Africa. Well, last week, U.S. President Barack Obama welcomed the leaders of nearly 50 African heads of state in Washington, D.C. for a three-day summit. And the summit is aimed at strengthening ties between the U.S. and one of the world's most dynamic and fastest-growing regions. Today with me on the phone line, I have George Koo, who is a China watcher and founder of Strategic Alliances, and Brendan O'Reilly, a journalist and a writer for China Outlook. Well, we continue discussing the significance of the summit and the potential rivalry of the U.S. and China over Africa. You know, some may actually say that this rivalry may escalate to the point where two countries could start a Cold War with each other. To what extent do you agree or disagree with this? I mean, how justified are these views and thoughts? Brendan, what do you think?
I think that's the Western perception and Western standard Western way of looking at things, which is that rivalry and competition must inevitably lead to war. And that's unfortunately the attitude on Capitol Hill and in Washington. I challenge that notion that why should economic competition lead inevitably to war? In order to have a war, it's like clapping hands. You have to have both hands. If only one hand is willing to clap and the other one demur, it may not be a war, unless, of course, you make up the provocation, which has happened in the past. The economic competition in Africa should be good for Africa. That means that major economic powers are paying attention and want to get their business. You know, it's not going to be all extractive. As we already indicated, there's going to be a booming economy in
Africa. But George, this is a very positive outlook on things, but you know, the reality may actually show otherwise. I mean, if we look at China and its foreign policy and its neighbors first and its assertion in the Asia-Pacific region, I mean, the U.S. is certainly worried about China's expansion there and the assertiveness of its policies. That's one region that causes tension between the two countries. And Africa is another one because, you know, Chinese investment there is very aggressive. Some analysts may be right in saying that the tension will get to the point, to the actually like really, really boiling point here. But Brendan, what are your thoughts? Where do you stand on this? I mean, do you agree with what George said? Or do you think that, yeah, indeed, I mean, forecasts like this saying that the tension between U.S. and China may escalate in the future are actually justified?
I partially agree with George. I think that he's somewhat correct in saying there are major differences. There's not necessarily going to lead to, you know, an open conflict or an open different alignment of interests wherein, you know, if you look at the Cold War between the United States and Soviet Union, they were looking for satellite countries, they were looking for client states. I don't think it will necessarily play out like that. I think there is a large degree of geopolitical and economic rivalry. I think that there's huge differences. Right now, Chinese foreign policy, it's not based on ideology. It's essentially based on interest. If you look at the Cold War, perhaps both the United States and the Soviet Union were basing their moves on their own perceived geopolitical interests, but there was ideology backing it up. If you look at China's politics, not only internationally, but even domestically, things have changed a lot since Deng Xiaoping came to power. Deng Xiaoping very famously said, doesn't matter if it's a black cat or a white cat. If it catches mice, it's a good cat. That's essentially Chinese policy around the world. China isn't trying to impose its vision of the ideal society or the ideal government or the ideal state on these countries in Africa. China is essentially trying to look out for its own economic interests. And if you look at the military side, too, there's no Chinese soldiers in Africa except in some UN peacekeeping missions. I think the Chinese approach in Africa and globally is just radically different than that of the United States. China is essentially trying to win this conflict by not fighting it.
The interests are more related to business than anything else.
In a pragmatic term, Marina, China has no interest in taking on the United States from a military. They know that it's a lose-lose proposition. Mm-hmm. More clearly than I think the politicians in Washington. The politicians in Washington doesn't seem to understand that the United States, from a military point of view, has a full plate already and can't afford to take on any more.
Sure.
The budget couldn't afford it. It's going bankrupt as it is.
That's right. But then again, the complexity of the situation in the region may place more demands on the United States militarily. So we don't know how certain conflicts will pan out. And
hopefully an enlightened leader or two will come along in the United States and hit themselves on the head and say, and smack themselves on the head and say, my God, we can't continue on the course that we're going on. We can't continue to be the world's policemen. We have to share the burden. We have to work with others, and we have to bring China in as a partner, not as an adversary. When they get to that point, I think we really will be getting somewhere, because then everybody's going to be on a win-win path.
Sure, and that's certainly a very, very constructive way of doing things. Well, you know, we have discussed so far China and the U.S. and their views in Africa and their policies. But here I'd like to ask you briefly as well about France. That's another player that has interest in the continent because France has a lot of colonies there. So what can you say about France's influence in Africa compared to China and the United States?
I think France still has a lot of cultural influence in Africa and economic influence. France is, you know, the common language of business in many African countries due to the history of colonialism. But I don't think you can compare France on an equal footing with the United States or you know, with Chinese influence in Africa these days. I think France, due to perhaps pride, political pride, still maintains this feeling of influence in Africa. But if you look at realities on the ground, I don't think it really pans out. Total trade between, I already mentioned trade between China and Africa, trade between the United States and Africa, trade between Europe and Africa. The entirety of Europe last year was about $137 billion. So, I mean, France, I think, is a big chunk of that, but you can't compare it with American or Chinese influence.
And George, your thoughts, do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think what Brandon said is true. I do think that France is behaving responsibly towards its former colonies and trying to help them combat terrorism and providing some military assistance, and that seems to be obvious in what they're doing in Mali and Algeria and places like that. But they're not a heavy hand, and so it's not a very high visible presence, except when these colonies got into trouble and needed some real help in trying to combat Islamic terrorism that's going on in those parts of Africa. France is not the major player. It's really China that has been the major player, and the United States that would like to reclaim their position in Africa.
Well, going back to the summit that took place in Washington recently, it was a 3-day event, and many call it unprecedented. What sort of expectations do you have? I mean, what are the things that will come out? And basically, what is the significance of the summit? And what can we expect to happen afterwards that would be equally beneficial for U.S. and Africa and other interested parties? Brendan?
Well, I think essentially what has come out of this recent summit is a big economic push. It wasn't just about the United States government and African governments, but also United States businesses. You know, large multinational corporations based in the United States are kind of being encouraged to invest more in Africa by the American government. As for the long-term effect, I think we'll see, you know, an increase of U.S. attention in Africa. But as far as the business side goes, I don't see how the United States can turn things around by this point. As George mentioned, as Chinese trade with Africa has boomed, United States trade with Africa has actually decreased recently. And I think there's several trends and reasons for that. One of them is that you have this increase in fracking and going after natural resources in the United States. So the United States needs to import less oil from Africa. And if you look at what Africa needs right now in terms of economic development, I don't think it's things that American companies are specialized in anymore. What you're seeing is now a lot of Chinese companies are moving into the more stable African countries, for example, Ethiopia or Madagascar, and setting up manufacturing. Because China has a problem now wherein the cost of their labor is too high. If you're getting paid making shoes in southern China, working in a factory, you can be paid around $400 a month, whereas in Ethiopia, they're getting paid $40 a month. there's a huge trade now. People talk about the race to the bottom. For better or for worse, Africa is at the bottom now, so they have an opportunity to really develop their manufacturing. And that's what Chinese companies have experience in.
Okay.
American companies don't really do that anymore.
George, what about you? What do you think would be the short-term and long-term effects of the summit?
Well, clearly, when 50 African countries heed the beck and call and came to this summit, that's clearly an indication of the prestige of the United States that they hold for the U.S., and that's why they came. You invariably would expect coming away from summits of this kind to have all kinds of declarations of intentions to do good, and that soon will be the immediate consequence of the summit. Whether how much of it will actualize down the road, as Brendan already pointed out, China and U.S., what they have to offer is very different. China has the low-cost manufacturing that they can inject into Africa. Again, ironically speaking, it's a capitalism-driven situation. It's clearly a classic case of water flowing downhill. If you are a low-cost country, it makes sense for China to go and invest there, provided you can justify it from a productivity point of view. U.S. is going to be coming from offering high technology things, and to the extent that there's a market there, there's an opportunity. One of the things that they talked about at this summit was how U.S. could provide electrification, putting in an infrastructure of electric grid in Africa. Whether that will actually happen or not is difficult to say because, again, in China, when you move towards Africa, the businesses tend to move in concert with the government. In the United States, the private corporations are not in the habit of moving in concert in step with the U.S. government policy. So a lot of unknowns remains to be seen. But
sure.
I think
yeah.
Basically, if the opportunity is there, if the economic opportunity is there, it will attract a private sector.
Well, I guess, George, as you rightly put it, there are a lot of unknowns at this point. And, of course, there are a lot of opportunities that the continent offers. And there are also threats associated with these opportunities, and partly because the region is not very stable at the moment. Some countries have a very volatile situation politically and economically. And how things develop for the region, both economically and politically, will depend, of course, on the internal stability. For now, though, it's very interesting to see how the continent emerges and what opportunities it has on offer for both domestic and foreign investors. Well, discussing the opportunities that Africa has on offer for U.S. and China and the possibility of rivalry between the two countries over the continent, today I had with me George Ku, who is China Watcher and founder of Strategic Alliances, and Brendan O'Reilly, a journalist and writer for China Outlook. Thank you so much, both George and Brendan, for being with us today in the program.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye, friends.